You are listening to Right On Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and 106.7 FM in St. Paul, and streaming live on the web at www.kfai.org. I'm Lynette Rainey Grandel.
And I'm Ian Graham Leask. Marley Cornell joins us to talk about her book, The Able Life of Cody Jane, Still Celebrating. It's a memoir of life with her daughter, Cody Jane, who, despite being born with spina bifida, lived a full life into her 30s.
Sedation during childbirth was customary in standard hospitals in Philadelphia in 1972. So Tad and I chose a maternity center where natural childbirth was allowed. When Cody was a small child, she never tired of hearing the story of her first few moments and the way we met. My first look at her was in the envelope of uh-oh. Cody emerged quietly on a Sunday morning in late August after 6 hours of labor. The doctor cautioned not to touch the baby's lower back as the midwife carefully placed the 5-pound, 8.5-ounce newborn on my stomach. The physician told me at once that my baby had a congenital birth defect called spina bifida. I asked what that meant. He said he'd get more information right away, but for now he knew she might be paralyzed or brain damaged. He paused before adding, "She might not live." He again instructed me not to touch a dime-sized pink membrane visible on the middle of her lower back. I looked at the pale-skinned baby lying on my stomach. She was wide awake and calm. Her dark blue eyes peered up toward my face. I reached for her hand, and she grabbed my thumb. I was startled by the strength of her grip. Despite what the doctor had just said, I could see my kid was okay. From that moment, Tad and I knew that whatever physical problems she might have, she was fine.
Well, this book is really something. I'm talking here with Marley Cornell, and she's the author of The Able Life of Cady Jane, Still Celebrating. And Marley is an award-winning author, artist, and social justice advocate, very big in the literary community around town, and she sometimes helps people to edit and write books. So look her up on the internet if you need such services. And she's written a lovely book here, a piece of non-fiction, which is, I suppose, a kind of memoir more than anything else. And it's also a kind of fusion of a memoir and a biography about your daughter, who unfortunately died at the age of 32. And this is the story of a celebration of it. And I was attracted to this, Marley, by your wonderful attitude about it. You're always smiling. You've always got a smile on your face. And if I lost one of my kids, boy, I don't know if I'd have that smile.
It's hard to lose a kid, no doubt about that. But I am more often aware of how grateful I feel that I had her for as long as I did.
It's an incredible attitude, and that attitude runs brightly all the way through this book, like a lovely, warm ribbon.
Oh, thank you.
And it's, you know, we try to, on the show, find that books like this that have some real purpose, and a lot of them can get very melodramatic and very weepy. And
yeah, I didn't want this to be a disease of the week kind of book.
It's not about that at all. It's all about strength and favor and beauty. Really fantastic.
Thank you.
And there's almost sometimes a feeling of really good fiction writing running through it. And it's surprising sometimes to find that you're not in a fiction. And I love that about it.
A couple of family members who've read the book told me that too.
Yeah. They didn't. They didn't think it was fiction.
No, they just said it had that feel to it.
Yeah. It's very engaging, very moving. It's very hard to put the book down, and I'm sure you try to teach people to write this way as well, right?
Yes, I do coach writers, yeah.
Create a page-turning kind of situation.
Yeah, every book needs to have some suspense to keep you turning the pages.
Well, what's the core of the book? Tell us what it's about overall, a little bit more. Go into a little bit more detail.
My daughter was always looking for books that she could read that would inspire her, that would have people like her as characters. And there just aren't books like that that we could find. Mm. And so for a book to have something where there was somebody who had maybe enormous challenges or enormous barriers that they had to confront on a regular basis, like she did. She was paralyzed from the waist down. She was in a wheelchair her entire life. She had brain surgery a number of times. She'd had dozens of surgeries in her life and hospitalizations, and had stopped breathing a number of times, and there were a lot of medical threats that she had to live with. And the idea of that somebody could withstand those types of pressures and things in their lives and still have a really happy, joyful life with a lot of fun and a lot of humor and a lot of things going on that were a lot, you know, very much worth doing.
Do you, how much do you think of that, of that kind of attitude that she had was just plain old born with personality?
She sure had a lot of personality. But I know when she was born, you know, the idea that she would have a lot of challenges like this and barriers that she'd have to confront became something we decided, Tad and I decided, and her subsequent other fathers joined in the process of keeping her working towards independence and a full life, and not letting the fact that most people didn't expect much of her to affect how she'd really be, and to know that she could do and be almost anything she wanted to be. In fact, we never said there was anything she couldn't do, as long as the right help and adaptations and assistance was provided.
It's spooky looking on the photograph on the back. You look extremely like her.
Oh,
she looks extremely like you. It's very interesting to see that. And of course, what the connection I've made is you've always been this kind of bubbly, outgoing, but extremely intelligent person. And you're kind of with it. You know, you don't lose your temper too easily. You're kind of with things, and you're kind of on the ball. And
well, you learn patience when you have any parent of a kid with a disability knows the challenge of patience.
Did you learn it there, or is that part of your personality?
No, I didn't learn. I haven't really learned it. I'm not really that patient.
Oh.
I read once that Irma Bombach said the reason why so many impatient people are given kids like this is that their life wasn't.
Oh, so there's a reason.
But you're forced to. You have to.
Yeah, that must be my reason. So one of the things that interested me all the way through the opening, especially to the book, was when this all happened. And you were in college, and it's 1968, and
right.
Wanted to go to
a concert. 72 is when she was born.
Yes, I know. But you start off in 1968, she wanted to go to a concert,
right.
So she got married, so that she could go to a concert with a guy.
Right. My parents wouldn't let me go with a boy anywhere. So
you got married.
I had to get married.
1968. Wow.
That'll show them.
Talk about summer of love. And then 4 years later, you have this
right,
this
after
baby.
College.
Yeah, and you finished college, all very responsible.
Yep.
But you were kind of a hippie.
Yes.
And how did being a hippie color the way that you brought up your daughter?
I think it gave us an open mind to a lot of things, to try alternative techniques. When she was born, we were thrust amidst dozens, if not over the years, hundreds of doctors and medical people. And one of the things that the medical profession was not very open to, especially in those days, was alternative forms of medicine. And we looked into holistic medicine and chiropractic and things that were given very short shrift in those days by the mainstream. And those things ended up being very, very helpful.
There's an interesting passage in the book where you discover the chiropractic methodology.
Yes.
And then very honestly and sweetly go to the clinic that you're going with the little girl, and you say, well, we found this new thing. Do you know about it? And they go berserk. And
yeah, they go berserk. Yeah. They said, if you intend to ever take her back to a chiropractor, you can't come here anymore.
Yeah.
And so we said, well, goodbye. And
yeah.
We left and went back to a different hospital system that did not limit us that way. Mm. But we didn't mention chiropractic again.
And did it help?
Yes, yes. There was a friend of ours had a dad who was a chiropractor. We were visiting him, and Cody was 11 months old, and he took one look at her, and he was able to make an adjustment to her pelvis that from the time she was born, her left leg hung down. If you held her up by her armpits, her left leg hung down lower than her right leg.
Hmm.
After his adjustment, they were even.
Interesting.
And in fact, when we left the clinic that day, the other mothers who had been watching us, one of them followed us out and said, they said, we take our son to a chiropractor too. We just don't tell them here because it's making a big difference.
That's right. Yeah, you can't. So what did it do? Did it make the other leg hang down, or did it make
No,
the
it made both.
Tighten?
It readjusted the pelvis so that the legs were aligned. Because
so
the legs
tighten.
Are the same width, actually. It's just that the pelvis had been twisted.
Mm.
And so by repeated by repeating that, what do they call it, adjustment
yeah.
over a period of time. We had to seek out another chiropractor who was in our area because this guy had been in New Hampshire, I think. And so in Philadelphia, we found somebody in New Jersey, and we ended up driving once a week to New Jersey from Philadelphia.
Wow. You know, it's probably... I always hesitate in these situations because it might be difficult, but I'd like you to tell us a little bit about what spina bifida is, and then and then take that all the way down to how that affected the eventual death of your daughter.
Well, spina bifida is a congenital birth defect. It happens in most cases before you even know you're pregnant. It's about day 28, they say.
Good grief.
At the time that my daughter was born, they had no idea what caused it. But now there's a great deal of evidence that says that not having enough folic acid in your diet has a bearing on that and perhaps other birth defects. And I know I, at the time before her birth, I had been taking a birth control pill that it was early in the years of birth control.
Mm.
And they used to put way too much of one hormone or another in it. And I was taking one that was later taken off the market because it leached the body of folic acid.
Mm.
So that was the guess, my guess. Nobody's ever confirmed that to me, but that was my guess as to why she was born that way. When I told that to my family doctor, he said, you can't think that. You can't think that. I guess he thought I'd feel so horribly guilty if I knew that I was the cause of it by what I did. But... my guess is that that's probably why I would have had less folic acid and could have very easily been the cause of her having a birth defect. So what it meant was that whatever part of the spine that was in development, the spine grows from the center outward to the ends, to the tailbone and to the brain. And at whatever point that growth happens at around day 28, something happens that stops the closing of the spine that protects the spinal cord. And so the nerves are exposed and... you end up having a little tiny opening. In some cases, some people have horrible bulging membranes and things like that. And of course, the birth process and anybody touching those causes further damage, and you can be paralyzed from that point down. Mm-hmm. It can affect bowel and bladder control, things like that. And then they watch to see if it'll affect the top end of the spine by measuring the head to see if hydrocephalus develops. And in Cody's case, it did. On day 8, they said, yes, she has hydrocephalus. And they said to me, I said, well, what do we do about that? And they said, well, you have a choice. You can do nothing and maybe she'll die. And I said, or she'll be brain damaged. And I said, well, that's not a choice. So I said, of course, do the surgery. So they did it. And over the years, she had 12 different brain surgeries when the shunt would break down. The first one lasted till she was 4. But there were kids. There was a kid born in the hospital the same week that she was that had 11 shunt surgeries in 11 weeks because the body didn't, adjust to it. And ultimately, when she was 32, not that I could say what caused her death, but she was up. We were in an emergency room waiting for a brain surgery because her shunt again was broken down. So,
and that's. When you say you don't know you don't know what caused death, or
well, it's complicated because there was some internal brain hemorrhaging, which hadn't happened ever before, and I don't know whether that was associated. You know, I don't really know.
Mm. Interesting.
The details of it were never really as important to me because they would make no difference one way or the other to me. But
no. Once again, I admire that attitude of this. It's an attitude, a very sensible position that you take, is that there's some things you can't control.
Yeah.
And I love what I want to love. And, out in the hallway, you were talking to me, just how blessed you feel.
So blessed.
For having the opportunity to have that girl for 32 years.
Yeah, I used to tell her that all the time. I felt like the luckiest mother in the world. She was so funny and so sweet. And the feeling of being loved by that kid... that woman, as she was the dearest, best friend you can have.
You had a lovely email interchange with her.
Which one?
Well, this one you put in the beginning of the book.
Oh, at the very beginning of the book.
I should probably read that.
Okay.
Rather than you, because that's you reading your own stuff. Or maybe Lynette. I'll do it.
I want to hear it with an English accent.
I'd like to hear Cody's words in an English
3 days before her birthday in 2003, Cody sent me this email. Thanks for giving birth to me and keeping me, even though I cost so much over the last almost 32 years. a lot of parents give up on their handicapped kids. The ones that don't give up should be praised. Thank you for keeping me. Love you too, Cody. And Marley writes back, you are worth every penny and every ounce of energy I have. You are the most important thing to ever happen to me, and I am the luckiest parent in the entire world. I love your guts, and I am happy that you were born almost 32 years ago. You are a gift to me that God must have loved me very much to let me have.
Yeah.
So, wow. And I read that. How could I not have her on the show?
Oh, thank you.
So, yes. I mean, it's that interchange is absolutely gorgeous and in no way sappy or sentimental, but just a straightforward sense of two people trying to tell the truth to each other.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your relationship as adults.
Well, by the time when she was 21, by that time I was no longer married to her second dad, and she considered herself very lucky and was proud to tell people she had three dads. In my case, I was married three times. I have been married three times, and she absolutely loved and adored each one of her dads, and each one of them stayed very close to her all her life. And when she was 20, I think she was 21 when she moved into her own apartment, which we had been hoping for that would be an eventuality, and it did happen. And so the first night, it was a big deal being alone for the first time in an apartment, and we talked on the phone late into the night. And for the first couple of months when she lived on her own, we did that kind of regularly and chit-chatted. Almost every day she called me, either at work. I was working at the time in a hospital, and she would call. I would always know when she'd call that it was her. Often she knew not to wake me up in the middle of the night because she knew that would scare me, unless it was really an emergency. So she'd wait. If she had thoughts in the middle of the night, she'd call my work telephone and leave a message for me. So when I'd get to work, my red light was blinking, and it would always be a message from her, which was so sweet.
Yeah, she was very considerate.
Yeah, she paid attention to whatever was going on. She was like, you know, a parent of a person with a disability ends up having a lot more intimate associations with things just for the physical things that you end up having to do. She'd have emergencies in the night. Maybe her bed had gotten wet and I'd have to come and see what I could do to help out and that kind of thing if there was no personal care attendant or available. And, you know, it's a different kind of dependency and interdependency. And independence has things attached to it that make it more possible because of help from other places. And she was very much committed to being a self-sufficient individual and wanted to all the time. And I wrote near the end of the book how I didn't find out until many, many years later that her first night alone in her apartment, she had been crying because she was lonely. And I thought, oh, that just broke my heart to think that. And I said, oh, Cody, I'm so sorry if I'd known you were so lonely. And she said, Mom, I would have wanted to do it the same way because I was independent. I was living on my own, and so many of my friends never had that chance.
Yeah, wonderful.
She was right.
But you encouraged that independence right from the beginning. There's a passage in your book that I will always remember, and we talked about it outside a little bit, and that's taking your daughter into the mountains.
Into the mountains when she was 11 months old.
Marley took her into the mountains with hubby and some other people, and they went up into the mountains. And which mountain was it?
It was Mount Jefferson in the Presidential Mountain Range, the White Mountains in New Hampshire.
It's like the second highest mountain in the range.
Second highest peak,
it's a scary
yeah.
place, and it's quite frightening. And she takes the baby up there, and a certain professional who we love and admire, literary professional, had advised you to take that out of the book, lest people think you're an idiot for taking
it. You should really remove that. It makes you sound stupid.
I did that with my son when he was 3 years old. I took him up Granite Peak.
I know, and I showed her the view, and she seemed impressed. I mean, I thought it was...
it's amazing. I mean, I'm glad I found somebody that's crazy enough to take the kid up there. And my kids also, you know, has grown up fairly fearless about things like that. And he was only three, but he remembers it.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think Cody remembered it,
no,
but we had pictures. And so
I'd love you to read a little section of that, but, you know, maybe just after it starts getting bad, the rain starts coming down, they nearly fall over the cliff, all sorts of things happen, and then it gets...
Well, we're climbing, and all of a sudden the sun goes over the mountain, and all of a sudden we're in darkness, and we unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And then it started to rain.
And so that was we scurried very quickly to get a plastic tarp, and there were the other couple, my husband and myself, my daughter lying on my stomach, and all of us hunched together under this tarp during a thunderstorm. The four of us lay side by side. Cody lay quietly on my stomach. Sadie, that was our beagle, we even took a dog. Sadie cuddled between Tad and me. Barry, our friend, was closest to the outside ledge. He suggested we tuck our hiking boots under our right sides to prevent rolling over the edge in our sleep. Cold rain battered the plastic tarp. Lightning flashed to our side and down the mountain. I hope the thunder and drumming rain muffled my voice when I whispered to Tad that I was scared. He turned and put his arm over Cody and me. Tears slid down the sides of my face. I was truly terrified. I couldn't tell if Barry or Judy slept, but they were silent through the night. The storm carried on for several hours. Cody's diaper was saturated. My denim shirt was soaked with warm pee. But I could not move to change her. Safety lay in holding still and trying to sleep. I saw an occasional flash of lightning reflected in my daughter's trusting eyes as she looked up towards my face. I prayed for God to rescue us, to bring us safely off this mountain. I wanted to be way below in any of the tiny houses I knew were down there from the twinkling lights I'd seen in the distance before the downpour. I was glad Morty was spared this experience. I imagined him safe, dry, and curled up asleep. That was our other dog. The rain stopped sometime in the night. The moment it was light, we climbed out from under the tarp and folded it into the pack. The sky was blue and cloudless, the start of a gorgeous sunny day. Barry used the rope to climb up over the ledge where he discovered that we were above the tree line. He came back down for Sadie, tucked her under his left arm, and pulled them both to higher ground with his right arm. Tad secured Cody in the backpack, and he, Judy, and I climbed up over the ledge. Once on open tundra, Barry used twigs to coach a campfire. Within minutes, a park ranger appeared wearing shorts, hiking boots, and a wide-brimmed hat. He said fires weren't allowed in the protected tundra. He kicked dirt onto the tiny flames, explaining that flora was so fragile that the campfire would destroy what took thousands of years to grow. As the ranger pointed to miniature plants, moss, and flowers growing between the rocks, I coveted his clean khaki shirt. While he wrote a ticket and attached a hefty fine, I thought, where was this guy last night when I thought we might die on the mountain? Out loud, I said, we were stuck on the ledge all night during the thunderstorm. You were lucky, ma'am. He folded the citation and handed it to Barry. Three people fell down the ravine in the past week, and they all died. Yikes.
Great. There's lots of passages like that in the book. Very, very good. And it shows something about your humanity, even to the dog, because the older dog, you didn't take.
He had arthritis.
He had arthritis in his back hip, poor thing, and didn't have to climb the mountain. So that's wonderful. It's a highly recommended book, and you've done very well to write it. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Great having you.
Such a pleasure.
Please write another one.
I am. I'm writing now a parenting book.
A parenting book. Yes. Well, there you go. That's exactly what you should write.
Yep.
So this is Ian Graham Leeskare. I've been speaking with Marley Cornell about her lovely book, The Able Life of Cody Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you.